Wait, take your songbooks and turn to 419. 419, we'll sing this song for the class. And we'll ask James to lay our minds in prayer before we go to class. 419.
Lord, we come before thee now, at thy feet we humbly bow. Oh, do not our suit this day, shall we seek thee, Lord, in vain. Shall we seek thee, Lord, in vain. Lord, on thee our souls depend, in compassion now thee send. Fill our hearts with thy rich grace, tune our lips to sing thy praise, tune our lips to sing thy praise.
Cover two chapters so far. Who has found Romans chapters 1 and 2 challenging? Okay. It's a deeper book. No doubt about it. Chapter 3? Anybody read chapter 3? Chapter 3 challenging?
Yes.
Absolutely. Okay. So I'm going to help you out here, kind of like what we did with the last chapter. That is, give you a little idea of what we're going to be discussing in this chapter. Wish everybody was already here. They're coming, but they're going to wonder, why are we going to be talking a little bit about the elder son and the prodigal son story? Because it's going to shed a little bit of light on what we're going to be talking about in the third chapter of Romans. I don't understand. Well, in order to really learn from the book of Romans, you have to understand why Paul is saying what he's saying. We know what we've been dealing with in chapters 1 and chapters 2. Now, remember what we talked about, guys. Chapter 1 pointed out all the transgressions that the Gentiles were guilty of. We're getting to chapter 2. The Jewish Christians were pointing the finger at them, saying what they were doing was wrong. Were they right about that? Yeah, they were right about that. Well, what was their problem?
They
They were wrong too, and they thought, well, you know, we're Jews, you know, and we're not accountable to that. And they were, they are. And so Paul had to deal a lot of with that attitude. You think you're of the circumcision, and they're of the uncircumcision. You think you're better than them. Now, what happens now in the third chapter? And I told you we're going to talk a little bit about that. We don't have to go back and read Luke 15. But guys, what was one of the problems? I'm going to shed a little bit of light on this. What was one of the problems that the elder son had when his brother returned in the story of the prodigal son? Lord.
Jealousy.
Jealousy? Anything else? A little bit more about that. Nancy.
It was kind of like, well, I'm here helping you out all the time, and he was going away, throwing everything away. What are you doing?
Okay. And then, of course, one thing led to another, and the father came out and said, no. He said it was right that we do this. Now, here, guys, here's what I just want you to glean from that story. Is that you have, and it's not a perfect illustration, but I have been mulling this over this week. Just to shed a little bit of light on when we get into this third chapter, to understand why Paul is writing what he's writing. Because the Jews now are getting to the point. Then what advantage do we have? You know, here we've got the elder son. I stayed home. And yet my brother goes off and he wastes his money and he comes back and he gave a party for me. He didn't have a party for me. So what was the sense of me staying here? He needed to understand what was the advantage of me staying here and being loyal to you. Okay? What we're going to learn is, since Paul has been trying to show the Gentiles, one, right? Jew and Gentile. When it comes to the gospel, nobody's favored. The gospel's for everybody. The Jews really need to understand this. Now, when we get into the third chapter, guys, what Paul has to deal with is the attitude. He's going to be anticipating and dealing with the mindset of the Jews here, saying where the Jews are going, well, if that's the case, then what advantage did we have as far as God giving us, what did God give them? Gave them the old law, right? They're just going to be saying, well, then what was the advantage then? And now Paul has to deal with, okay, well, there was an advantage. You had somewhat of an advantage. And not only that, because you've had an advantage, don't think somehow that you escape the judgment of God. That's going to come into play in this third chapter too. You don't escape the judgment of God just because you're Jews. The judgment comes upon everybody, the Gentiles and you. And not only that, you're judging me. And the me here is Paul. And you're judging me. And so all these loose ends you're going to see come alive as we get into this third chapter. Okay, guys? So let's take a look as we get into this. Our first section is 1 through 8 of chapter 3. Let's this week start at the back. And so 2 verses apiece. If you don't want to read, you don't have to. But Josh, do you want to read? First 2 verses, then James, then Dave, and then up to Sandy.
What an advantage then has the Jew? Or what profit is there of circumcision? Much every way, chiefly because that unto them were committed the oracles of God.
What if some were unfaithful? Does their faithfulness nullify the faithfulness of God? By no means. Let God be true, though everyone were a liar, as it is written, that you may be justified in your words and prevail when you are judged.
What if our unrighteousness demonstrates the righteousness of God? What shall we say? Is God unjust to inflict wrath? I speak as a man. Certainly not. For then hell will God judge the world.
For if the truth of God has increased through my life to his glory, why am I also still judged as a sinner? And why not say, let us do good evil, that good may come, as we are slanderously reported, and as some affirm that we may say their condemnation is just.
All right, there's just so much going on right now in dealing with this letter. Paul's having to deal with what people are saying about him, what they're saying about his teaching. He has to clear all that up. He has to deal with their misunderstandings. It's not easy, but it's understandable. Okay. Now listen, guys. To be honest with you, just because something is hard to understand doesn't mean you can't understand it. Remember what Peter told about Paul's writing? Remember what Peter said about Paul's writing? What did he say? Yeah, some things are hard to understand, but some people have twisted to what? To their own destruction. They have twisted them. And so, just because I say something might be a challenge for us, doesn't mean we can't understand it. And the way I explain that is that I have taught this many times, but you know what? I'll go through this and then I forget. It's hard to remember all this stuff. Really, I mean, that's why we keep studying and studying and studying, okay? And so when we get into the fifth chapter and you ask me to go back to the third chapter, I might go, oh man, I have to refresh my mind again. I have to go back and get into that mindset. That's why you just have to take it a step at a time and don't get overwhelmed. Keep the big picture in mind. The big picture of this book was Romans chapter 1 and verse 16, which says what? I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it's the power of God unto salvation, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. You get that statement? To the Jew first and also to the Greek? See, that's the point that he's trying to get across here. It came to you first. But, you know, and ultimately the prophets were talking about it, and so we get into this first part of this chapter. Okay, Jews, you have a problem with all of this, what I talked about in the second chapter? I can understand what you're saying. What advantage, then, has the Jew? Or what is the profit of circumcision? Why even bother? Okay, is what he's saying. And I can understand them saying that. You know, especially with their history. Paul says, much in every way, chiefly because to them were committed the oracles of God. What's that? Layman's term.
What is it?
Yeah. God gave it to you. And God gave you his oracles. God gave you his word. I mean, that ought to make you feel good in and of itself. Now, let's face it, we've talked about this before. Could God have chosen a different race? He could have done anything that he wanted. Now, if we put a different race in here, let's put the Chinese. Okay? If we put the Chinese in here, and if I spelt it wrong, let it go. I should put China. I can spell China. Okay. Now, with the Chinese, we would be having the same discussion, wouldn't we? They would be thinking the very same thing. Hey, it's not just for you only, it's for everybody. See, you have to understand, let's not get so caught up in, you know, the idea of the Jews here for a moment, that God just used them to bring a plan and bring out the plan. What was the plan? The ultimate plan?
Christ.
And it's summed up in the good news, right? The gospel. Which, Romans 1:16. That's the big picture, okay? God had a plan. And people just, how many times have you heard me say from this pulpit, people have more problems with why than the what. We know what the what is. Even with our brethren that are off, they don't have any problems with what the Bible says. They have a problem with why did he say that. Well, I'm not here to argue why God does certain things. Well, why did he choose the Jews? Why did he do all that? Answer?
Didn't he have a lineage for Christ?
Yes.
So that's where the start was, the lineage?
Yeah, and that was all part of it. But again, it comes back to that question, isn't it? Why did God choose that?
Just does. He wanted to. Because he did.
If you have an answer, look, if your answer is as good as somebody else's, the point is, doesn't really, no matter what, it doesn't matter why, he just said he did, okay? And I guess we could just, as we do with our children, why? Because I said so. Listen, because God decided he had a plan.
Well, I'm just thinking from the Jews, from going into Canaan, you know, conquering all those Gentile nations, you know, the baggage that they're carrying from that.
Yes.
He's got to address this because we were superior. God was on our side. Overtook all these people, and now, you know, a year later, he wants to accept them, and not only accept them, but bring them in as equals.
Exactly. And I'm glad you brought that up, Tim, because this is what people miss all the time. People say, oh, that Old Testament just full of wars and killings, I just don't like it. But I'll tell you what, if you lose sight of the fact of, of the idolatry and trying to stamp out transgression. If you forget that aspect, you're in trouble. And that's what he's going to be doing in this third chapter.
I'm going to try and explain a lot here. Jews didn't exist at all until Abraham. Abraham was neither. Abraham was picked because of his love for God and his obedience for God. That's why they were picked. Okay, also, you have to go back to Abraham even before. Okay, so that's how they were picked. But he wasn't a Jew. But because of the promise, because of his faithfulness and obedience, they were picked. And they were chosen, and they became the Jewish nation. They weren't a nation until they left Egypt. So to say Jews, Gentiles, they're from the beginning, there weren't Jews.
That's why you have to go back to Genesis. We're going to get into Galatians chapter 3 in this study. Now, I know we're in Romans chapter 3, but in Galatians chapter 3, he makes the point there that we discussed before. Remember, guys, he's saying, now here you are, keep talking about the law of Moses here. And over here in Galatians chapter 3, which is in the, you know, the New Testament, he brings up the point that God gave this promise to Abraham when? 430 years before the law. So we think, why are you putting so much emphasis on this when it actually goes back to here when we have the promise for all nations would be blessed, is the key.
So my answer to your question is, why were the Jews picked? It was because of Abraham's obedience and love for the Lord.
Well, it's true, but yet, you know, when Abraham had children, it was going to go a certain way. You know, God chose that, is the point. God was, you know, through his providential, you know, through his providence and planning things out. It's like when, I know we're kind of off topic, but we're kind of on topic, but it's kind of like when God was going to kill Moses. Remember he was going to kill Moses? Remember why he was going to kill him? He hadn't circumcised his son yet. So, you're not going to kill me. I'm the chosen one. Listen, God, through his providence, could have had the other another plan. The point is, that wasn't an empty threat that I'm going to kill you. I'm going to destroy you. God is always in control. And so this plan that we have here, the Gentiles have to see in this third chapter that everybody is accountable for their actions. And if you're going to say God is unjust for judging you, then we're in trouble. That was part of our reading. Look what we get into. He mentions here, not only did you receive the oracles of God, he says, look at verse 3. For what if some did not believe? Will their unbelief make the faithfulness of God without effect? Certainly not. Indeed, God be true, but every man a liar, as it is written, that you may be justified in your words and you may overcome when you are judged. What he's getting into here, guys, and it's not easy to, you know, we got to keep it in its context here, especially when we get down to verse 9 and on. What happened when man sinned? What's that? Okay, it separated him from God. But what happened when sin entered the world? We were just talking about it. What did God do? God had a plan, didn't he? Before the foundation of the world. So, what you're going to be noticing the mindset here that Paul has to deal with is that the Jews are somehow thinking this was a good thing. Because what did this do? It showed the righteousness of God. It showed that God is going to help me. And so what they need to understand is, well, wait a minute. Okay, that might be good, show the righteousness of God, but if you're going to think that God can't judge you, you're mistaken. Okay, you're sadly mistaken. A law was given because of that, to help me. And what law? And what did the law do? It made known what sin was. Deep? Yes. Understatement. Okay? But Paul, here he is, trying to tell these brethren, what if some did not believe? Will their unbelief make the faithfulness of God without effect? You know, so they didn't believe. Now, the faithfulness of God, this plan, the gospel that we're having here, which is the theme of the book. I don't want to read anything into this. People get chucked. It seems to me anybody can go into this and make the Bible say anything they want. You keep in context of chapters 1 and chapters 2 and what's going on here with the mindset with the Jews. That's what I'm trying to get you guys to understand. When you study with people, I told you this is a breeding book for error, right? Reason being is because people do not keep things in its context. What is he dealing with here? What is the problem, okay? Keep focused on that. You might not understand everything that we talk about here, but you know what you're going to prevent? Yourself from believing a lie. Do you understand that? You might not understand everything, but as we go through this, you're going to say, well, but I know he's not talking about what you're saying, because that even contradicts what he talked about in chapter 2 or chapter 1 or whatever. So remember, it's profitable to study. Even if you don't understand everything, it's going to prevent you from believing a lie. That's the importance of study. Now, having said that, here he talks about that you may be justified in your words and you may overcome when you are judged, but if our righteousness demonstrates the righteous, or excuse me, our unrighteousness, yeah, sin, that's what unrighteousness is. If our unrighteousness demonstrates the righteousness of God, what shall we say? Is God unjust who inflicts wrath? Did you see this? You see what he's saying? He's saying to the Jews here, Did our unrighteousness show the righteousness of God? Yes or no? I'm going to say it again for those who are having a hard time with this. Did our unrighteousness or their unrighteousness, did sin demonstrate the righteousness of God?
Yes.
How? It's simple. I already said it, but how?
Yes, mine.
With the one. That's it. This isn't rocket science, guys, although it's kind of hard to understand. We're in Romans chapter 3, guys. Okay. Really deep chapter, trying to explain it, going back through it. The Jews are thinking that they're better. You know, they're wondering, why do we have what advantage did we have then over the Gentiles? Well, you received the oracles of God. But as Paul mentions here in verse 5, if our unrighteousness demonstrates the righteousness of God, what shall we say? Is God unjust to inflict wrath? So, what he's telling the Jews here, keep focused on this. Chapter 3. Okay. If your sin demonstrated the righteousness of God, okay, which, as Keith just said, by providing this plan of salvation, why is God somehow in the wrong to punish you for your sin? Why? You got to understand the Jews here. God's saying, wait a second. You're saying, like, the Jews are going, well, it's because of our transgression he brought forth this plan. He gave us the old law. We're special. God's not going to judge us, because that's what happened in chapter 2 and verse 1, right? What makes you so great? You can see you point the finger at error, but you don't even see that you're guilty of doing the same thing. You see, it's following along with the first two chapters, Kim. So don't get frustrated here, okay? And you just want to leave here. Here it is, folks. Leave here with more answers than questions. I'm not going to say you don't have any questions. Leave with answers. So what you do know is these Jews think we should be punished. The wrath of God should not come upon us, because the righteousness of God came because of our unrighteousness. Okay.
No. The converse that you're thinking, but it should come upon them.
It should be these guys. Erase those guys. Yeah. It should be upon those guys. Now, why would they say, not upon us, but upon them? Why would they think that? But remember, guys, he did in first chapter. The first two chapters are saying that all have what? Which he leads to in this chapter, famous verse. Yeah, 3 and 23. All have sinned and come short of the glory of God. It's just been like escalating to that point in these first three chapters. So if all have sinned, as Paul has been trying to point out, these Jews are sitting there thinking, but really it's them. They're the bad ones. Why are they thinking that then? Why them? Why is the Jew saying them and not us? The wrath of God should be upon them and not us.
They didn't have the law, did they?
That's it. You see? This is the hard part. Trying to get this out of their head is very difficult. And as we've been discussing the last 3 weeks, same for Christians. I've been baptized. I'm a member of the Church of Christ. I'm not missing heaven. I never miss service. I'm there all the time. Doesn't matter if we have hate in our heart. Doesn't matter if we're arrogant. Doesn't matter if we don't worship God in spirit and truth. We just go through the motions. It doesn't matter because you want to know what? Because I'm a member of the Church of Christ. I'm a Jew. Wrath of God's not coming upon me. It's coming upon them because they're not even here. You see, that same mindset doesn't change. And that's what makes it so powerful. You say, well, how did the Jews end up thinking that? How did Christians end up thinking that? Same thing. Same thing. And we have to be careful about it. Be very careful. And so we're making those analogies as we go through our study. Kim?
So that's the answer to number four, all that you just said, right?
Question number four was, why didn't the Jews feel that they should suffer retribution for unbelief? That's the answer. Keith?
Well, I was just going to say that, that's relevant. So, when we say, when it says that, in verse 5, but if our unrighteousness demonstrates the righteousness of God, what shall we say? It demonstrates the righteousness of God, but it's almost like they're believing that the because of our sin brought forth the righteousness of God. The righteousness was already there.
Right.
Our sin didn't cause anything to happen to God. He already had this plan in place. And this is the part I forgot.
And if it pops in, let me know, because that never happens. All the time. Remember, this is somebody else's mail. Okay? Paul is writing to the brethren at Rome. So let's understand what they're thinking.
You know what I was going to say.
Go.
verse 8, where it said, let us do evil so that more good may come. That's not the thing. That's not the thinking there. I mean, I like Paul's reason here, because he's saying, in your line of thought, let's just continue to do bad, so God will do more good. And that's not what this. That's not what it's about.
Yeah. No. And this is not unique to these guys. Does that sound familiar? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? Paul had to deal with that issue with some other brethren. It's that same idea. I did all this and he did that. Wow, I'm a good guy. No, no. It's almost like. The Mormons will tell you that what Adam and Eve did in the garden, good thing. It's good. Eyes open. It's what you want. No, not good. Sin. Bad thing. Okay? And try and get people to understand that. But that's absolutely right, Keith. And so once we understand what the Jews are thinking, now we know what Paul's doing here. You know, because we get into this book and say, well, let's just preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. And that's what this is all about. Trying to clear up some misunderstandings of what he's doing. And that's why people abuse this book all the time. Verse 6 was, an answer to that. Is God unjust to inflict wrath? I speak as a man. Okay. In other words, Paul is just, it's rhetorical. Certainly not, for then how will God judge the world? For if the truth of God has increased through my lie to his glory, you now remember what they thought about Paul's teaching. See, that's how you, see, I don't understand what's talking about here. Paul's just now switching over to their side, what they're thinking. Okay, my lie? Okay, you don't like what I'm saying? So, for if the truth of God has increased through my lie to his glory, why am I also still judged as a sinner? And why not say, let us do good, do evil that good may come? As we are slanderously reported, and as some affirm that we say, their condemnation is just. We know it doesn't fit. But guys, that's what illogical thinking does. Okay, when you want to try to justify transgression, you know, I mean, we spend a lot of time, and people will ask me sometimes when people fall away, Chuck, how does this happen? Or why did this happen? Why did that happen? Why did this happen? Why people do bad things, I don't understand. Other than the fact that the Bible says in James chapter 1 how sin comes about, I say, they wanted it. And so people will believe whatever they want to believe. The Jews. So who's to blame for the Jews' mindset here? Who's to be blamed? Tell me how some people might say it's God's fault. They wouldn't be right, but what would their mindset be in saying, well, I think it's God's fault that they're thinking this way?
God's got chosen them.
That's it. It's God's fault. You know, if God had it chosen, they wouldn't have this problem in the first place. You're missing the point. Okay, God had a plan, of course, and ultimately chose the Jews to bring it about, but it didn't make them better. I mean, how many of the Jews were unfaithful? Lord.
Honest and truly, God has wanted every nation all along to seek him and follow him, just like the Ninevites or the Amorites, instead of the Amorites not yet fallen. He's always wanted men to repent and follow him, and he's given them numerous chances. We just don't have a book following their lineage and their problems. We've got this because that's the line that Christ comes,
right,
and that's how the plan is laid out. But he's always, and the Jews were missing this, he's always wanted everyone to love him.
Well, when we went through Hebrews, and we talked about, I'm going to give a new covenant. Remember that long quote from Jeremiah 31? Where's Jeremiah? Jeremiah is prophesying, you know, there's going to become this new law. You're going to do away with this old law, and they'll all be one. So it shouldn't have been a surprise. See, that's the thing that's happening here, is the Jews didn't even learn from the oracles that were given to them. That was the sad reality of all this. You're not even learning. And if I do the analogy back with Christians, you're not even learning. If you think you can just come and go through the motions and you say you're better than them and blah, 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 you know, I've got a one-way ticket to heaven, you're not even learning from the gospel that's been committed to you. Same thing, Josh.
Sorry, something's going on running out. But, I mean, so she said it was offered to the Edomites and the Ninevites. Also, like, an Old Testament, it was just for the Jews, though. I mean, at that time, it was just Jews only, right? Not other people, they were there, but they didn't.
And in the Old Testament, Josh, people could become proselytes, okay? And so they had access to the old law if they would conform to it. That's the thing, okay? If they would conform to it. The Ninevites were not a Jewish nation, okay? And so, and which is part of maybe probably the mindset of Jonah. What would Jonah want to do? I'm not going to go teach them. They don't deserve to receive God's forgiveness. And so they did have that back then, Josh. Okay? And that's brought out in this book of Romans. And actually, even last chapter, we talked about that. That in the very last chapter, which is chapter 2 here, way back then. What we discussed there, Josh, is there's a phrase in there, how that they were a law unto themselves, because even the Gentiles, that's what Paul was trying to get across. The Gentiles took learned some of the laws that were given to you. And they were keeping the laws and you weren't even doing it. And so what makes you think that you're better than them and they're keeping the law that you're not even practicing? And so that happened in the Old Testament. They heard about it. They heard about those teachings. And they would incorporate that. And even some of the Jews didn't even do that. Okay, so they did exist, Josh, okay, back then. So yes, the law was given to the Jews. And now we're going to talk about the New Testament. That was Romans chapter 1 and verse 16. And that'll come up time and time again. All right, so again, there's this idea, let us do good, or let us do evil, that good may come, of course not. Now, this 9 through, what's our section? Well, we're not going to go all, 9 through 18. We're doing time. We're doing good. So we're over to Jesse. Zigzag. If you don't want to read, you don't have to. Nobody, you know, Nikki and Sarah, and if you don't want to, that's fine. But two verses apiece. We're going to go from verse 9 through verse 18.
What then? Are we Jews? Are Jews any better off? No, not at all. For we have already charged that all, both Jews and Greeks, are under sin. As it is written, none is righteous, no, not one.
Are we moving up?
Yeah.
Okay, we're up to Mike.
There is none who understands. There is none who seeks after God. They have all turned aside. They have together become unprofitable. There is none who does good, no, not one.
Their throat is an open grave, but their tongues they keep deceiving. Poisonous asps are under their lips.
whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness.
Their feet are swift to shed blood. Destruction and misery are in their ways.
In the way of peace they have not known.
One more.
There is no fear of God before their eyes.
Thank you. Boy, I'm having the deja vu here. The religious group I came out of, denomination, many years. I love reading this passage to support what false teaching? Calvinism. Depravity. One of the points of Calvinism, that you're born depraved. There's nothing good about you. Rowan, sin stain. That's what their mindset, of course. Now, when anybody brings up depravity, I love going to this passage. Because this passage refutes it. Did you notice anything in that passage that refutes depravity? Anything? That we're not born in sin? Okay.
So, but there is none to understand.
Okay.
So to understand, you have to be able to understand.
There you go. Let's follow. There's a bunch of them there. You got understanding, being able to seek. Look at verse 12. What's that first line, Ted? What's that imply, Keith?
They fall in the right direction when they turn aside.
You can't leave a place you've never been at, okay?
Verse 13.
13?
With their tongues, they have practiced deceit.
Uh-huh. Guys, we're not talking about children here. And when again, he talks about the idea that they've all turned aside. I love that, because you've heard me preach on redemption. That we cannot preach redemption. The Calvinists, not a Calvinist alive, but they're consistent. They cannot preach redemption, because redemption means what? Brought back. Now, if you preach the redemption of Christ, and you're preaching to an audience of people here, you're going to say, you need to come back. Well, preacher, I've never been there. Well, yeah, you were. You left. Every one of you were right with God at one time. But as you grew older, and you understood the consequences and the difference between right and wrong, you chose wrong. All have. And I love that one. We didn't read it, do we? That's verse 23. That's the verse I always like to stress when people talk about depravity. You want to quote John or Romans 3:23? All have sin. I always say that. Sin, by definition, is what? Does anyone know what sin is?
Transgression of law.
1 John, right? 3:4. It's transgression of law. Therefore, you have to break something. You know, you think of Rowan out there. I mean, what? Break what law? Breaking laws, okay? And so the whole idea that this book and this chapter, this section, is teaching depravity is not even found here, okay? That's how they're justifying their transgression. Now, why did Paul bring it up then, guys? Why does he bring up this section now, Keith?
Well, he just basically continued to prove his point that the Jews are no better than the Gentiles. We're all on the same level playing field.
And Keith, with the parallel that I keep making with members of the Church of Christ and everybody else, how would you parallel that?
I think it's the same for us. I mean, we're all sinners, you know, just been taught the truth and obeyed the truth. It doesn't make us any better than others in the world.
There's no room for haughtiness, arrogance, putting, you know, you're better than anybody else. The point is, we've all sinned and come short of the glory of God. There are people out there sin, people in here sin, right? We all sin. But the difference is that we want to seek forgiveness of sin. We want to be covered by the blood of Christ. That's the difference, of course. But nobody's better than anybody else. All have sinned. That's the point that he's making here. So when I'm sitting here and striving to do what's right, I'm just trying to make sure that I am pleasing my God. I understand everybody sins in this place. But on an individual basis, we need to be serving the Lord. Jews, your mindset has caused you to sin and stay in your sin. That's the difference. Because you think punishment, the wrath of God, is not going to come upon you because you're a Jew.
No, and that's what Keith was talking about there in verse 9. What then, at the end of that 1 through 8 section, are we better than they? Now, who's the we and who's the they?
James and Jen.
That's it. I see, you see, guys, I've been in Bible studies. They have no idea who the we and the they are. Because they don't study. They don't look at the content. And that's how false teaching starts. Okay? Guard against it. And even when somebody throws you a curve and you're in a study or at work or whatever, make sure you have a Bible handy. And you tell them, well, look, that's a good question, but I want to go back and I want to get the context. They'll look at you like you're strange. That doesn't matter to them, but it matters to us as far as getting the truth. So, are we better than they? Not at all. For we have previously charged both Jews and Greeks that they are all under sin. Of course, that passage that we listed there, it's all these transgressions that exist. Nothing has changed. Trying to be a mind reader here when somebody wants to say something. Okay, does anybody have any questions? We went through all these different transgressions here. Feet are swift to shed blood, destruction, misery in their ways, not knowing the way, the way of peace they have not known. There's no fear of God before their eyes. That's what sin does. And when I read through that passage, I want to make the parallel constantly. That can be the attitude of Christians. It's the attitude of Christians. See, why even be a Christian? Why even believe in God if you're going to do all these things? For the same reason they're claiming they're going to heaven. They believe in God. But there's a lot of people that believe in God today, guys, and think they're going to heaven. And they disregard all this stuff. Why? Because they might say, I'm Church of Christ. Or I'm a Baptist. I'm a Catholic. I'm a Pentecostal. I'm whatever. I've got my allegiance. This is what it is. And so, well, when does this come into play? Does it matter? Does God's word matter? That's what makes us different. Okay, and I'm preaching on that this morning. Okay, any other thoughts? 9 through 18, guys. Tim,
no.
I knew you.
Paul had not been there before, right? You talked about that in chapter 4.
Right.
You want to preach to him. So a lot of what he's telling them here is his either hearsay, what he's heard maybe is coming from there, or he is his background. Knowing what they must be thinking.
Right. And the ultimate one, which is fire.
Right.
Exactly. That they needed this stuff. God is providing the information that is needing, and of course, dealing with their background and all those
things. Versus, I mean, I think some people could think he's writing this because somebody must have written him, or it's kind of a discourse, and this is his side of the discourse, versus we don't really have that. It's just his supposition and the inspiration.
And I'm glad you brought that up because that does exist in the religious realm. I'm amazed of how many people out there, and I see it on the TV a lot and the radio, is that the writings of Paul and others, it's almost like Paul's words are separate from God. Okay, that they're not inspired. That's the way he thought. That's why you have some people who think that, well, Paul was a bigot, you know, or Paul hated this person. And Paul and James just didn't see eye to eye on things, you know. And Paul did preach, you know, you don't need works, whereas James says you don't need works. And, you know, they just didn't see eye to eye on it. Talking about it. It's all God's word, and that's where they miss it. I saw a hand here a moment ago. I did.
It was me, but it was kind of what you just talked about. What verse was he talking about?
Originally went back to verse chapter 1, verse 15, where he had been there to preach to them, so he hadn't been there.
Yeah. And he longed to go there.
Well, I was going to verse 20, where it says, therefore by the deeds of the law no flesh will be justified in his sight, for by the law is the knowledge of sin. You know, the Jews are saying, we have the law was given to us, so that makes us right. And you're saying, you know, the law doesn't make you right. The law basically gives you the knowledge of what's wrong and right. You know, God justifies you. You don't have none of your deeds aren't what justifies you. I mean, we can be guilty of the same thing. We can say, oh, but we've got, you know, I know the word, and you know, I've got the, you know, the knowledge, but it doesn't justify us.
It really doesn't. It's like, you know, them having their all the scrolls. you know, having all the ancient writings. It's like me having my back seat full of all the law books for the state of Indiana. And I'm flying down the highway. Cop pulls me over. Only information. I know your laws. Okay, but that doesn't mean you don't obey them. It's the same mindset. Just because you have the law given to you doesn't excuse you from obeying them. And it just, it's so elementary, it's so basic, but they missed it. But it's imperative that we understand how they got to that point, because we can get there too. And how we come back, what Paul's trying to do, trying to get them back on track, is get them to see the greatness of God and all this. Put God back in the picture. That was the passage that Keith brought up. You're here to obey God. It isn't like God made you better than Him. You're accountable to Him. Now, the next section that we have here is 19 through 26. We have 4 minutes left. So let's just read 19 and 20. Who was the last person to read? Was it Hannah? We're over to Nancy. Nancy, just read 19 and 20.
Now we know that whatever the law says, it says to those who are under the law, that every mouth may be stopped, and all the world may become guilty before God. Therefore, by the deeds of the law, no flesh will be justified in His sight. For by the law, it is the knowledge of sin.
All right, now, this, I had my thought. I really want to write it home, too. Yes, okay, this is my point. And you can't lose sight of this. I've stressed this before, and it's going to help you in your future studies going through this book. Every time you see the word law in the book of Romans, chances are it's talking about what?
A law.
Okay. That's what people miss in the religious realm. Okay, I'm saying in the religious realm, they're thinking any law. I mean, any law under the gospel. The Calvinistic idea, the predominant denominational thought is, this is a dirty word. You can't do anything to go to heaven. Okay, I was ingrained with that thought. Because with that, they have this idea of works only. Well, can works only save you? No, I agree with that. Works only can't save you. But can faith only save you? No, but see, that's where they get the problems, okay? And so their idea is that, no, you can't do anything. And so they, when they read this word law, you know, we're not justified by law. Hey, that Chuck just said you have to do this. Well, there's a verse right there that says you're not justified by law. You can't do anything. What are you talking about? He's talking about the old law there.
Most people also believe in verse 19, it says to those who are under the law, you know, they do not feel like they're under the law until they actually become a Christian.
Oh,
a lot of them use that.
That's true. Again, it's because they're not understanding who he's talking to here. And that is crucial. I don't know if you guys even understood it. Our time's about gone. What Tony just brought up, because we need a study on that. You wouldn't believe it, how many people today, even Christians, will think that I'm not accountable to the gospel until I obey the gospel. And you say, well, what's that all about? Easy. I've been divorced and remarried 27 times, but now that I've been baptized, now I'm accountable to the gospel. No, you were accountable to the gospel before you obeyed the gospel. That's just silliness. To say that, you know, well, there's certain laws you're obligated to do after you become a Christian, but before you become a Christian, you know, you're not accountable to those things. You're not sinning before you become a Christian in those areas. Where did that come from? Tell you where that came from. Right there. Okay, what Tony's talking about. This idea that you're not under the gospel until you obey the gospel is foolishness. Go into all the world and preach the gospel. Why are you going to preach them the gospel? They don't need to hear the gospel. They're not accountable to it. Yes, they are. Okay, they're accountable to the gospel. Every one of them. But it's because of passages like that that Tony just read in verse 19. Run under the law. Talking to those people who are trying to be justified by the old law. And their mindset. Because remember, there's a goal to this letter. The goal to this letter is the idea of focusing on the gospel and that it is the power to save. Not the old law. Don't think that you're better than anybody else. And the struggles that you're going to have when you try to be justified by this law, we're going to get to the passage I keep mentioning from week to week. That which I don't want to do, I do. And that which I do want to do, I don't do. People go, oh, that's the inner struggle of a Christian. No, it's not. No, it's not. And the passage will bear witness to the context of what it's dealing with. Don't pull it out of its context, guys, because if you get when we get to that chapter, you're going to see it can't mean... Oh, sorry. What was that? 667.
Sorry.
Don't do that
here.
Okay. I'm done now. I'm good. Thank you, guys.
I've got a set of my printers on my
Yeah, this.